It's happening, readers. We have heard that you want paperbacks from our tailored book recommendation service called TBR. And I'm delighted to let you know that we're going to be in sync with your request. That's right. We're bringing paperbacks. Whether you hate carrying around bulky hardcovers, you're on a budget, you want a wider range of recommendations, or all of the above, now you can get a paperback subscription from TBR curated just for you by one of our bibliologists. Get all the details at mytbr.co. That's mytbr.co. We're bringing paperbacks.
Before we get the show started, we want to hear a word from our lovely sponsors.
It's happening, readers. We have heard that you want paperbacks from our tailored book recommendation service called TBR. And I am delighted to let you know that we're going to be in sync with your request. That's right. We're bringing paperbacks. Whether you hate carrying around bulky hardcovers, you're on a budget, you want a wider range of recommendations, or all of the above, now you can get a paperback subscription from TBR curated just for you by one of our bibliologists. Get all the details at mytbr.co. That's mytbr.co. We're bringing paperbacks.
Hello everybody, I am Louise.
And I'm Mary Kay.
And together we are Novel Gazing, the podcast that talks all about literary fiction. We are recording today's show on January the 7th, 2020. Ooh. Happy New Year to you and your family. Mm-hmm. And on today's show, we are discussing current affairs, news from the literary fiction world, whether Harry Potter can be thought of as literary fiction, and we're sharing our latest reads.
But before all that, let's hear from one of our sponsors.
All right. So as promised, we have news and current affairs, and we are going to take one item each really to share with you today, I think. And the first one that I want to draw your attention to is a really interesting article that I came across on The Guardian the other day, and it's called Without Women, the Novel Would Die. Which is super dramatic.
It is. I love it. I love other people's drama. I don't want to be involved in it, but I love hearing about it from other people.
I know. I'm all over this. So Joanna Thomas-Core, she writes this really interesting thing about how women love literature and the power of reading fiction, and in particular the idea of book groups as kind of revolutionary hotbeds, and how they come together and the power of women sharing stories in this manner. So I'm going to pass this over to Mary Kay and go, what did you think of the article?
Well, I'm super glad that you showed it to me because it was very compelling and it showed so many different perspectives on the reading of fiction by especially women. Like, it even has some examples of a man and his son trying to give away novels, and men were like, no, I don't want one, thank you. But women would take three. And one of the things that I thought, I'm just going to read this quote so I don't misquote it. One of them that stood out to me was, if the male reader's choice is more thrillers or fantasy, women are more likely to go for, quote, literary fiction. That suggests to me that women read books to understand themselves and men to escape themselves, which I think is really interesting. And I think that just the way that, I mean, I know that I took it somewhat out of context, but to me, that doesn't say so much about men and women as it does, like, what our culture expects of them.
Oh, yeah. And what they expect of, like, the genres and the type of fiction.
Also true. And I just think that it's like a third byproduct of, or tertiary byproduct of, like, this toxic masculinity where men aren't supposed to feel. So they have to read things that are historic, or, and I'm not knocking that at all. Like, that's very important. But the fact that they were kind of in the article, they were embarrassed to admit that they were reading a novel, whereas it was kind of expected of women. And then there's another quote, which I'm going to get it wrong because I didn't select it, but for women, it makes them a friend, and for men, it makes them a scholar if they're reading fiction, which is weird to me. Because I hadn't made that distinction in my head, but it definitely, now that someone pointed it out to me, I'm like, oh yeah, of course. Like, ask, and like the last three men that I've talked to about it, they're like, I mostly read nonfiction, but like when I was telling them about my book, which is nonfiction but reads like a novel, so I'm kind of like walking that line, something for everyone. So yeah, and then there is a quote in here as well where she. And I can't remember who says it. I think it's the writer of the article. But women also use books to gauge one another's aptness for friendship. Mm. So, and this is a quote for me, if someone doesn't value Wuthering Heights or just thinks it's overblown or baggy or too wild, then I like them just a tiny bit less. That's what the quote says. And I'm like the exact opposite. Like if someone says that they're one of their favorite books is like one of those kinds of novels. Wow, I'm part of the problem. But that period, I'm like, oh, I don't know what I'm going to be able to talk to you about because it's really hard for me to engage with it. Not because I don't respect it as good and important. It's just like, I don't know. It's just a weird thing. Like, we talked about it on our episode zero, right? Where I was like, yeah. I don't like it. I don't know how to like it. I wanted to, but I just didn't. Well, what do you think?
I think Wuthering Heights is a really interesting example because it's such an iconic, angry, big, painful book that I think,
yeah.
I don't know if I'd like you a little bit less for liking it or disliking it. I think, you know, it's I don't know if you can boil communication down to kind of this art of holding up a book and saying, I don't know, where do you stand on this before I talk to you? It's an interesting one, but I think as well the quote you pulled out about what was it, the choice of men's nonfiction, mm-hmm. It reminded me of a point in university. We used to have this running joke where if a member of staff read it and recommended it to us, it was usually in the 18th century original Latin. As opposed to like the 21st century, really simple translation, that it got this kind of better quality, the older and the more archaic and specific it was. And it's like, dude, we've essentially read the same book that's just been represented in different facets and in different tones. And right. The story itself is essentially the same beast. You don't get literary cool points for trotting out the fact that you've read this archaic translation, like staring at these people going, what is this?
My first question is, why do you hate yourself? Yeah. Like, why would you do that to yourself?
Like, God, I've tried.
Right. If you're not reading Seamus Heaney's Beowulf, like, why would you read any other one? I don't understand.
Yeah, I was literally just thinking of Beowulf. I've read some, like, the best version of Beowulf I've ever read just literally very recently is a comic by Hannah Sackett, and it reimagines it as being done by geese in an Anglo-Saxon farmyard, which is brilliant. I love it.
It is brilliant. I love that.
And I haven't got time for this whole I don't know, if you don't read it in its original, you're dead to me. I think I tailed away into an expression of like incoherent fury. I think that's what it was. I just started squeaking fury and making sounds.
Is the name of our next book.
That's it. Can we trademark that now, everybody? Just FYI, that is incoherent fury.
That was my idea. That's our band's name. Leave us alone.
Incoherent, I love
fury.
That.
Love it.
So
can it be fury with an IE? Like,
ooh.
The beasts? Yeah.
Yes. I'm sold. I'm down with this. I'm planning our retirement album as we speak.
Love it. Let's do it. Oh, man. That's amazing.
So,
one of the things, speaking of incoherent fury, like the feminine kind, one of the other things I pulled out of your article is, and I did not realize this, and of course, after this person wrote it, I was like, well, of course, But being accepted as a good reader has long been one of the ways for women to achieve greater social status. I think that was the author of the book. No, it's by Helen Taylor said that, excuse me. But that makes a lot of sense to me, especially because it like that the novel came about as a way of like entertaining women.
Yeah.
More highly educated. So reading was a lot of showing kind of that you were smart even without a formal education. And I think that that's dope. And yeah, so, I don't know. I just thought it was cool. So it's newsworthy to me. Yeah. It's cool.
No, I thought it was really interesting how that social status kind of ties into essentially what is popular entertainment back in the day. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like when, as you say, these novels coming out for women to read and engage with, it's a repurposing of almost this commercial thing to use it to I don't want to trot out the word patriarchy this early.
Throw it out there.
Yeah, throw it out.
It's there.
It's a way to escape the binds about your position in society as a woman, that you can pick up this really easily accessible commercial thing and just start reading. And I think that's kind of amazing that people do that even now, that we work in society to allow that movement to happen. You know, like libraries amaze me on a daily basis that they even exist, that we have this thing to go, you can make your life better and different and shape it in the way that you want to shape it and do. And all you have to do is to walk into this room where we will give you free books. I just think that's, I think that stuns me on a regular basis.
It's pretty amazing that we are able to share like that.
Mm.
Like someone did that. Like someone made that possible.
Yeah, that's that really that we cool. had that call as people to go, do you know what? This is yeah. important for us and we need to celebrate it.
Yeah.
I know. Oh, on a related note, go to your library. If you haven't been for a bit, go and enjoy and celebrate what is one of our like greatest achievements as people. We make a lot of mistakes, but I think that libraries are a marker of hope in a very complicated society.
Yes. Agreed. Awesome. That's our TED Talk.
No, I was like, we love libraries. It's pro-library.
So speaking of the like women achieving greater social status, my article that I wanted to share is about Zora Neale Hurston, whom I love. The article, which I will link to, of course, is called It's Time to Fall Back in Love with Zora Neale Hurston. And the back in love is the part that I disagree with, because I've been obsessed with her for a really long time. It has also come to my attention that not everyone has had the chance to be obsessed with her because she was writing during the Harlem Renaissance, if in case you're unfamiliar with her work. I think her most famous work is Their Eyes Were Watching God.
That's the one I know, yeah.
Which is a masterpiece, I really believe. So she grew up in Florida, but she was a genius, and so she studied both anthropology and fiction in, and I'm going to forget which university, but in New York, I believe. Is that correct, do you know?
I'm not 100% sure, no.
I'm sure y'all will let us know, excuse me. If I misspoke about that. But over the summer, I was reading several of her books that I was less familiar with that aren't novels, like Tell My Horse, which is essentially an ethnography of folk tales in the Black areas of Florida. And she was particularly from specifically, I believe, Eatonville, Florida, which is very rural.
Okay.
She also has this really amazing one that I was just fascinated by. That one's called Tell My Horse. Of Mules and Men was the one I was thinking of about the folk tales. And it has a small section about voodoo culture in Haiti and Jamaica. And the book Tell My Horse it focuses on that almost wholly. So one reason why she was written out of history, which is essentially what happened, and Alice Walker was like, who is this amazing woman? Let me go try to find her grave, and could barely find it, which is one of the things that made her work kind of resurface. Yeah. Not found, but resurface, because it had been so pushed down for a long time, was that the male writers of the novel and other writers of fiction and poetry, but particularly Black male authors at the time, were like, this is neither anthropology or fiction, and it doesn't have a place.
Okay.
So, which to me is just like the ultimate tragedy, because there is no one or the other. Like, everything is all mixed in together, and to think that there's one true form is just, I think, kind of elitist, honestly. But yeah. So that's why, like, she didn't get as many publishing opportunities at the time as she should have. And part of what this article is talking about is that Barracoon, which I'm sure that I mispronounced because I've only ever read it and never said it aloud until that moment, was published for the first time, I think, in 2018.
Yeah.
So about 70 years after her death, I think. No, she died in the 60s, I think. Well, it's about 7 years after she wrote it, from what I understand.
Okay.
Anyway, years-wise, I'm not sure. Long, long time, too long after her death. That was published for the first time. And now in 2020, we have to look forward to two more story collections coming from her, which I'm really excited about. And I'll link to, like I said, this article in our show notes so that you can read it. But the author is really fun too, because she likens Zora Neale Hurston to Tupac, and that they both release work posthumously, which I think is pretty great. It's funny, but not funny, because both of them deserved more.
Yeah, I was really interested in your point about when you were saying that, you know, they were forgotten because they kind of weren't, allowed to be remembered,
right?
In a way. And I think that's a problem that hits a lot of avant-garde, experimental, different women writers, in mm-hmm. that they don't have that accepted space to be different, to be unusual, so to speak, in the world. So they do suffer this. And I'm really glad, as I say, that you picked up on it. And it's not that they're forgotten. It's just because, you know, they write, and they write brilliantly. It's just that they're not allowed to survive their literary work, to survive within the context that a lot of people write literature as and understand it as.
Yeah, it's like the world wasn't ready for them yet.
Yeah, exactly.
It should have been, but which was the point, right? Mm, of writing exactly. Like the avant-garde things. It's like, you should be thinking about this.
Yeah.
But yeah, she was ahead of her time. And I feel like that about other, I mean, even visual artists like Frida, right? Like,
oh God, yeah.
She's super famous now, but was for a while living in the shadow of Diego Rivera, which he's also amazing, but not as amazing.
But it's just interesting to see that, like, trajectory towards right. like being, towards being known in a way, and that we're now able to, I think it's able to understand their stories in a way that we're very lucky to be able to have this and to be able to do it and to shout out about them. Because I know I was saying to you before we started recording that I don't know if Zora Neale Hurston has really translated over to the UK. Spoiler, I am from Britain.
and I'm from the South, in case y'all couldn't hear us.
You might pick this up. Yeah. So it's really interesting that we've got, like, Mary Kay's based in America, I'm based in Britain. And so we can have these discussions about the books that move worlds in their countries and that they shake the foundations of things, but maybe don't sort of move out of those country boundaries and stuff. And I think Zora Neale Hurston, I've only read a couple of her titles, so I was really interested when Mary Kay picked this, because I was thinking, well, I should be reading more of these, because I had also come across her work through Alice Walker, who we were, we were set to read in school. We read The Colour Purple, and I remember bawling my eyes out at the film in class.
Oh my gosh.
I know, how traumatic to watch that when you're, like, for surrounded real. By everyone. I was just thinking, yeah. I'm totally fine weeping out my soul.
right, yeah. I actually went to school in the place where that is set.
Oh, wow.
So... Right. And I didn't read it when I was living there. Thank God. Mm. Because I would have just been like, nothing has changed. Nothing has changed. Everything's the same. Like, but yeah.
Just walking around clutching the book to your chest, just weeping.
I mean, basically, oh my gosh, even just the starter is like the opening of that book is heartbreaking because she's writing letters to God about how somebody told her, you better not tell nobody but God.
Exactly.
So she does. And it's like... Anyway, these are two really important, I think, regional authors that should have more range, I guess, like more reach. That's the word I was looking for, than they do or have. And I think that, like, as a world, we got a long ways to go, but we're doing better. We're making positive strides.
Yeah.
And I think that the people who aren't are finally getting called out for it.
Exactly.
Which they should be.
Well, yeah, quite. And if we can, like, we are readers ourselves, we're journeying through this, we're learning so much as we go along, and we want to hear from you with the authors that you recommend and the authors that you want to have this mouthpiece and this space to be talked about, because that's the great thing about reading, isn't it, right? That you learn from what everyone else is doing and what everyone else is coming across. So yeah, please do feel free to get in touch with us via social media and let us know the authors and the articles that caught your eye. So, as promised, we are going to start talking about Harry Potter. But before we do that, I think, we thought it was worthwhile to signpost you towards some works by trans authors here. You may be aware of some remarks that were made by certain individuals on social media before Christmas. We are not going to rehash those marks here because we don't have time for that on many, many levels.
We can link to it so that you can go get acquainted.
Exactly.
If you want to go deep into the crevasse.
Yeah.
Which you can. We just don't. We're not going to do it here.
Yeah.
But if you don't know and you're not going to go research, we still think that these books are worth reading. So either way, you win.
So yeah, so I want to signpost you towards a book called Peter Darling, which is by Austin Chan, who describes themselves as a bitter millennial, decent chef, and a queer trans writer of romance and speculative fiction. I am very much pro retellings of Peter Pan. I find it really interesting when classic British books are pulled apart and reshaped and remade for new readers. So I have been tucking into Peter Darling and I have been enjoying it.
And I want to recommend Daniel Mallory Ortberg's The Merry Spinster, Tales of Everyday Horror. Y'all, this book is so wild. It's a collection of short stories that also retells some of your favorite childhood stories. For example, The Velveteen Rabbit was retold as The Rabbit, and it straight shook me. Like, whew, I had to take a break after that story. It was so good. So the title is The Merry Spinster, and on the book it says by Mallory Ortberg, but since then a transition has occurred, and the author now goes by Daniel Mallory Ortberg, from what I understand. So yes.
Brilliant. Yeah.
So just so you know, when you're finding the book, like, it's the same person.
Exactly. Yeah. We felt that was important to make clear before we move into our next item, which is...
Yes, because we have some ambivalence about this author at the moment, but we're going to talk about it because we said we were going to. So yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's an important discussion to have. We want to discuss whether Harry Potter can be described as literary fiction. It's something that popped up online and I was thinking, it's actually, you know, there's a lot here for us to figure out and to find out about, because we're still trying to work out what literary fiction is, and we recognise that it can be found in a variety of places and not just slim books about relationship crises from retiring men. It's very specific. I won't even go into the books that have scarred me recently in that area. Okay, So the story of the boy wizard and of Hermione, who kept him alive for 8 books and a world of spin-offs, provided, quote, the narrative experience of an entire generation. And again, we will link down to the article where that comes from, which refers to Harry Potter Academic Conference. And as someone who researches children's literature myself, that was really interesting to me. But the point of this article is that we want to discuss whether Harry Potter is literary fiction. What would it gain from being described as such? And do labels even matter anyhow? What is the point of labelling Harry Potter as literary fiction? What is the point of labelling anything as literary fiction? So let's discuss. And I'm going to immediately pass the book and go straight to Mary Kay for her opinion.
Okay. So you asked a lot of good questions. So I think the way that I defined literary fiction last time we were talking, and this is like a very abbreviated version, is kind of like asking what is art in 2 words or less, right? Mm-hmm. Is that it makes me think about what happened, or not even what happened, but what things mean and why they mean that after I'm done reading.
Yeah.
So like it sticks with me, and it makes me think that what's happening is not like the plot is not the only point.
Yeah.
Or maybe not even the point that the book is trying to make. That's how I have defined it very loosely. And to your point, does it matter? Not that much. Like it, I mean, I think it can, if someone is saying I am looking to read something literary.
Yeah.
Right. Like it's a descriptor. And somewhat subjective / very subjective. So I think that it can matter, but it's not necessarily like better or worse than. Like it's a different way of describing.
Yeah, so it's a descriptor, labeling, not necessarily like a quality label.
Yes, no. I think that is the case. So when I say I don't think that Harry Potter is literary fiction, I'm not dismissing it at all. Like, I am among that generation who grew up with it. Like, I got the book on my 11th birthday.
Oh.
So, I know, it was amazing, and I felt like a magic witch. Anyway, so the reason I say that not really is because, I mean, anything can be analyzed. Anything is a text. Everything is valid for academic dissection.
Yeah.
The books that can be written about Harry Potter, absolutely those can be literary. Like, just because I want to write about, like, cult classic horror doesn't, like, those are not literary texts, but that doesn't mean that what I write about them can't be.
Ooh, okay.
So I think that, I mean, and again, like, all of these labels are going to fall apart with just, like, one prick of a balloon, like pinprick, which is fine. And I've accepted that and made peace with it. But I think for me, like the things that stuck with me were not why that happened, but so much as like, what would I do in that situation, which is very plot driven to me. And I think that things that are plot driven are generally not literary because that's what you're focusing on is what's going to happen, not why it's happening or how.
Okay.
If that makes sense. And also, and this is just a personal observation, the books get better. Like, she's teaching herself how to write as she's writing.
Yeah, I think that's really important. There is a definite shift in the texture of them almost.
For sure. Like, book one is very straightforward. As Harry ages, so does the level of, like, literary, I think. Like, it becomes more philosophical as the books progress and as the character ages. So he's actually thinking about those things rather than like, why is Dumbledore keeping secrets from me?
Which would have been a really useful question to ask earlier, Harry, FYI.
Right.
If you'd have just gone.
Yeah. Ask why, not what.
Yeah. Just
don't
just
ask about the secret. Think about why he's keeping it from you.
Like, not what is this like, why is this dungeon trying to kill me? Oh my God. So yeah, I think your point about like him growing up and it becoming more literary almost then is really interesting there, because I do think there's more, as I say, texture. I overuse that word a lot, forgive me. As the books progress.
I agree.
I think that
I did say better. I didn't mean better. I meant more dense.
I think for me, the literary fiction quality of Harry Potter comes not in the journey that Harry himself faces, but in the journey that Neville has.
Yeah.
I think especially if you finish the series. Exactly. He's got such a massive background arc that shifts increasingly towards the front as things come along. And then when you finish, you kind of realise that actually this isn't Harry's story in a way, almost. This is almost Neville's story. And in that is some big, big questions to start asking.
Yeah. So maybe like when you're asking these questions, it does seem more like literature, because now we are asking why we focused on Harry so long when the hero's journey is really Neville's.
Oh yeah, love Neville.
So making a lot of good points, Elise. I have some thinking to do.
I was like,
I've always identified with Romilda Vane the most. Because she's like, no, you will love me. Like, she's like, by any means necessary.
Yeah, no, I quite enjoy that approach. Go out, get what you love. Get what you want.
I'm a cross between her and McGonagall, I think. Those are the characters I identify with the most.
Well, maybe I do enjoy Neville's growth towards incredible hotness in the films, which is something to appreciate.
Yes, that was an amazing puberty change.
Yeah, which is wonderful. But I also enjoy Hermione secretly solving all the problems and keeping both Ron and Harry alive through the entire thing. So yeah, I think it gains a certain quality from being flipped slightly to the side, these books, and you kind of go, well, actually, as you say, perhaps it's the little characters that we focus on and maybe the shifts that go as the characters grow older and they have this kind of opportunity to reflect on the absolute state that is their lives and what they are experiencing. And I think it's literary fiction. Everything can be literary fiction. But sure. I don't think it's literary fiction 100% straight through all the time in every single space.
Yes.
Awesome. Okay. Solved. Problem resolved.
We did it.
Send us your queries for next time.
Oh, yeah. If you have topics that y'all want us to talk about, we would love that. We love listener feedback. So
yes, please do. Yeah.
Love to hear from you.
I think the last thing we wanted to chat about today was...
What are you reading?
Right. Well, I have... As I have banged on about libraries quite a bit, you may gather that I am a librarian in my part-time. But I think it's important for me to, on a personal level, to support libraries. Because I like having a job. And I like libraries to exist.
Yes.
So I get a lot of my books from libraries, because without them, I would be bankrupt 1,000 times over. So I will be talking to you throughout this podcast and over the shows that come after this about books that maybe have been out a couple of weeks, a couple of months, and even a couple of years. One of the books that I want to talk to you about at some point is by Simone de Beauvoir, and that's hitting, 70-odd years now? But I think it's important to recognise that you don't have to necessarily chase the brand new books that have come along. There are amazing classic texts out there that we can shout out about. So I want to mention An American Marriage by Tayari Jones.
Yes.
So good, right?
She's from here. She's from down the street. I'm in Atlanta, y'all.
See?
I get so excited.
We have local fans on the scene as we speak. But it's been, I always think it's a great thing when you can be reserving something on your number 53 on the queue or number 102, because you know these books are making a difference, that they're incredibly popular. So I literally just got it. I'm about halfway through, and her style is amazing. It kind of aches.
Amazing.
You know, yes. Everything is so painfully realistic and honest and aching with truth. It's just, it's really impressive stuff. So if you haven't come across it yet, I do recommend it immensely. And if you have, don't spoil the ending for me just yet. I promise that I will be finishing it off in the next week or two. So after that, we can talk about it.
Okay. We'll talk about it then, because I'm ready.
Awesome.
I read it over the summer and I was like, it is, yeah.
So what about yourself? Mm-hmm. Have you been tucking into anything?
So I just finished this book called Little by Edward Carey.
Ooh.
And it is brand new, and I had to kind of train myself to read new releases because I was an English professor, and so I would try to teach as many classics as I could because I knew that my students would hit the new releases anyway, if they were reading. And so I had to kind of train myself to get in there. Right. Because, this one's been on my shelf since I learned how to read, and I haven't, I haven't gotten to it yet. But so Little, though, is very cool because it is a fictional biography of Madame Tussaud.
Ooh.
Who, right, of the Wax Museum.
Yeah.
And in case y'all don't know this about me, I love horror, and I love horror adjacent stuff where it's like the point of it might not be to scare you, but it's scary. It's real scary. So one really cool thing that I learned about that is she was a very small person. I don't know if she had dwarfism, but it definitely was one of the first things that people noticed about her was that she was very small.
Right.
Also, I don't know if y'all knew this, but she cast in wax the heads of people who had been beheaded by the guillotine.
Well, everyone's got to have a hobby.
I didn't know that. It's so cool. It's so weird. Like a mob in the book, because not very much has been written about her, because I think we are seeing this now as well, but like people don't get written about if they are working class.
Yeah.
Typically, which she was. Even though now I consider her an artist and a historian, then it wouldn't have looked like that. Like, she got in trouble because they were like, how could you do this? And she's like, this mob told me I was going to do it, or they were going to chop my head off too. Like, that's how I could do it. But it was just, it's really cool. And it seems very well researched, but it reads like a novel.
Yeah.
Which is what I like to do. Like, I feel like I didn't retain a lot of history when I was in school because it wasn't told to me drunk history style, like with a narrative. It was just like facts, facts, facts. And I really love that. I mean, I of course take it with a grain of salt, but I recommend that book.
Excellent. I love your mention of drunk histories as well. There is going to be some point where I recommend to you to go and look at Horrible Histories, which is like the UK equivalent, and it's genius. Oh my God.
I just want everything to be narrated by Tiffany Haddish. I love her so much.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I would second that.
Yeah.
All right.
So, yeah.
So, I think that is everything for today. Thank you to our sponsors. Thank you to you for listening. We love having you along. Please come again. Do not forget to subscribe through however you get your podcasts. We would love you to be a regular listener, and don't forget to tell your friends about us. Thanks and goodbye.